Straight Talk About Vision Loss with Dr. Z.
Welcome to Straight Talk. I'm glad you've joined us again. This is our fifth Straight Talk, and today we've got a very interesting discussion for you. Here at the National Center, we're very involved with a lot of programs as usual. Next week, we are launching our Washington Seminar. This is an effort where more than 500 local members of the National Federation of the Blind come to Washington, D.C. for an effort to educate congressmen and senators about the real issues and the real needs that blind people have. So we're real excited about joining with our members in this effort next week. In addition to all the activity in D.C., we will have over 100 of our members coming here to the National Center for Tours on Monday, and they'll have a chance to see our new Independence Market and our new Consumer Electronics Showcase. But let's start talking about our guest for today. Our guest for today is very familiar to the National Federation of the Blind. We're pleased to have Dr. Mark Maurer, our president, with us. Dr. Maurer has been president of the National Federation of the Blind since 1986, and he leads all efforts related to our work in the field of work with the blind. Today we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic related to what is and what is not discrimination for the blind. And so let's go and talk to Dr. Maurer. So let's talk with Dr. Maurer some about a very important subject. As I mentioned before, Dr. Maurer is the president of the National Federation of the Blind. So welcome, Dr. Maurer, to Straight Talk.
I'm pleased to be here. Thank you very much.
Good. Well, today we're going to talk about a really important court ruling recently that you've had some concerns about, and so have our members. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit about this court ruling on currency?
At the end of November, there was a decision by the Federal District Court in the District of Columbia saying that the currency of the United States, this is the paper bills, are not individually distinguishable by touch for blind people, and that the fact that they are not distinguishable individually is an indication that the currency discriminates, and that the failure of the government to produce tactilely identifiable currency is an issue of discrimination against the blind.
Hmm. So that court ruling was saying that it's discrimination not to have tactile represented currency.
That is correct.
Okay. So what's the problem that we have with that ruling? What's your concern about it?
Blind people have been using currency effectively for as long as I can remember. And I can remember using currency myself for about 50 years now. I wasn't very good at it 50 years ago, as I was about 5 years old, but I was fascinated by the fact that you could take a dollar bill and get somebody to give you something for it.
Yeah.
And I'm still somewhat fascinated by it, although it now takes $100 or maybe several hundred dollars to get what I want. But I still find it very easy to use the money of the United States, and there are thousands of blind vendors who do it, and tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of blind people who do it. And for the court to say that we can't use the currency is incorrect.
Yeah.
It also suggests that if we can't see it, we can't use it, and we use documents and non-tactile things like that that other people look at every day and we use them effectively. So to argue that we're unable to use the currency is also to argue that we can't use everything else unless it's tactilely identifiable.
So that has huge implications for what might happen if all of a sudden employers decided to say, well, you can't have this job because you can't use a print document.
That is correct. I am a lawyer and I have used print documents all my life. When I sign a document and file it with the court, I am obliged by the rules of the court to say that the document is accurate, or at least as accurate as I can make it. And so I am, by my signature, indicating that I think it's authentic. I can't read it individually myself. I can't touch it and identify the words on it, and yet for me to do that is a vital part of my work.
Yeah, and so you would use a reader to read it, or you'd use a computer speech program or something like that, but you would have either technology or an individual read you that, and you would know what it said, so therefore then you could testify for its validity.
That is correct.
But you couldn't physically read it with your eyes.
It's the same way that I do with the currency. I either have somebody else identify the currency for me, or else I have a piece of technology to do that. And I do the same thing with the other documents that I create.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So in review, our premise is that blind people have been dealing with currency for a long time. We have found methods and systems for dealing with it. And so it would be a very weak case to say that we're discriminated against because we've been doing it.
Well, that
it's
is
not a
true.
Problem. Right. So anyway, there are lots of ways that blind people deal with currency, so maybe we should just kind of demonstrate a few. You've got a gadget there. What does that do?
Well, this is a currency identifying gadget that tells you what the bills are.
Uh-huh. So you just put the bill.
This one tells me that this piece of paper that I put in here is a $5 bill.
Oh, so you just slipped it in there, and then it read it to you.
It did indeed.
Yeah, now we got another bill.
I have another bill here.
Okay.
I'll try this one. And
it
tells me that's a one.
Right.
So I'll give you this one, and I'll take that five.
Well, like we've always said, blind people don't have a lot of trouble dealing with money. Is just getting enough of it, right?
That is our primary problem. We have had suggestions from members of Congress for at least 30 years that I know of that the money be brailled or otherwise made tactilely identifiable. And although that might be nice from time to time, it isn't essential. There's always been something more that we wanted Congress to do. There are more important things to do, and we've never thought it was high enough on the priority list to go after it.
Yeah, so when we ask for an accommodation, we want to make double darn sure that it's something that we really have to have, not something that we can get around with the systems that we've been using for a long time.
Yes, that's true. If you think about it, we who are blind, we know more about blindness than anybody else. And if we go demand something, then others may think that it's actually necessary. Mm. We need to demand or to ask the country to do what is important for us to get at the information we need in order to participate in commerce, and we need to leave the rest of it alone. That's the responsible way to behave.
That's right. You know, I was talking with some folks recently, like yourself, who have traveled internationally a lot, and there are some countries that have different size bills, but they pointed out an interesting thing. Unless you have all of the different kind of bills in your wallet at the same time, how do you know which one is which by size?
You don't.
Yeah.
And when I travel in other countries, which I've done from time to time, and use the currency that they have, I use the same system in those countries that I use in the United States because that system works. So I take the money and I either put it in different places or I fold it in different ways and I manage it that way.
Yeah.
I have traveled in England and the currency there is of different sizes depending on the denominations of the bills, and I take the bills into my hand and I don't know enough about the bills to be able to distinguish them. So I have to use the good old U.S. system, which has worked so well for me for about a half a century, and it works well for me in England as well as it does here.
Yeah, that's similar to what I do in my wallet. I have a couple of compartments. I put the 20s in one, and then I put the 1s and 5s in another, and I fold the 5s in a certain way. Is that what you do?
Well, that is
what
I do. I had a $1,000 bill once.
Oh, how would you fold a $1,000 bill?
I decided to keep that in a very special place so that I wouldn't mislead.
Yeah, that'd probably be a good idea. But generally, what this whole issue comes down to is that we in the Federation believe that if we're going to ask for a special accommodation, it has to be something that is real high stakes, really important. Like, for example, our suit with Target recently and website accessibility. That was a more important access issue, right?
It's more important and it's also cheaper. Mm. The Target thing is this. We've asked that Target make its website accessible so that blind people can use it, so that we can spend our money on Target's website the way sighted people can. And to do that would probably cost, we estimate, $20,000 to $30,000. Mm-hmm. In the amount of money that Target spends to get its website online, that's a very small piece of money.
Yeah.
For the Treasury to change the bills, it depends on how it would change them, but it would cost millions of dollars.
Oh,
some
yeah.
people say $178 million. Some say that it would be less than that, but that is only the amount of money that the Treasury would have to spend.
Mm-hmm.
If you made the bills different sizes, which some people suggest is a good idea, then you'd have to change the cash drawers of all the cash registers in the country.
Yeah.
Now, this is an enormous cost for business.
And vending machines.
All the vending machines, all the bank machines, all the company machines that accept currency of whatever size. It would be very expensive to retrofit the entire currency system of the country, and the benefit, there would be a benefit.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a huge benefit, but it's so small comparatively that it doesn't make sense to do it.
Yeah. So it'd be kind of nice to have different size currency, or maybe to have some tactile differences on them, but it's not going to be that much better than the systems that we've developed right now for the cost.
So that's correct.
Yeah.
Now, there's people who say that there are different countries that put Braille on their money. In Japan, there's Braille on the money.
Ah.
It's almost always indistinguishable tactily, or at least the bills that I've looked at are.
I would think so, because, you know, just you smash them into your wallet, people are handling them. You know, I heard one time that the dollar bill, a paper dollar bill, only lasts 2 weeks in circulation. Just in the handling of it.
Well, I'm glad that I've lasted longer than that. Now, in Canada, there are bills that have allegedly tactily identifiable symbols on them.
Mm.
I've tried to identify them, and I cannot.
Yeah.
And it isn't that my fingers don't work to identify things. I've used them to identify millions of things in the course of my lifetime, and they're very good at it. But
yeah.
I just can't do it. So
yeah.
I'm not sure the systems that have been created to make tactically identifiable bills work very well.
Yeah.
And to get a tiny benefit and a questionable solution that would cost a lot of money seems to me to be a complete waste.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes people might think, you know, the general public might think, well, yeah, having tactile money would be a good thing, especially good for people who are new to vision loss. But, you know, as we know, people who are new to vision loss can learn these simple systems that blind people have been using for a long time also. It's not hard to learn how to fold your money.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Now, there are some machines that are coming to be available. This machine that we've looked at today is fairly slow and fairly expensive, but there are some machines that are being developed. The National Federation of the Blind has a reading system in the Kurzweil National Federation of the Blind Reader, which has just been completed, and there are some other machines that are about to be built that will be less expensive than the current currency readers, and I think they'll be more effective.
Yeah. So, like, for example, if someone hands you a bunch of change and you're in a rush and they can't tell you which bill is which, you know, I just kind of fold it over, stick it in my wallet, and then when I get someplace where it's private or whatever, then I'll sort my money. And with these machines, then you could actually listen to what your money is.
Indeed,
yeah.
You could.
Yeah, good. Well, it's an interesting issue, you know. It's one that makes us all think a little bit about the choices we make and what we advocate for. But as you've said so often in the Federation, we're about blind people being really independent and integrated in society, and that we're really not all that different than the rest of the public. We just have to do it a little differently.
We believe that blind people can participate in the society as it is created right now with minor modifications.
Yeah.
If the modifications become so major that it costs society a lot to let us be a part of it, then it's too much.
Yeah.
And the society won't tolerate blind people to be a part of it. We should insist on having the accommodations that we need. We should be careful not to insist that our country spend a lot of money just to have us around otherwise, especially when we don't need it.
Yeah, very good. Well, and I think that's a good way to close this discussion. So thank you very much for joining us here at Straight Talk, Dr. Maurer. And thank you for listening in, and we'll see you again next time. Goodbye.